Kriya Vagada and the whole business,
right? You know, we're prime targets. Okay, well, wait a second. We have to get Joey here also, right, on the phone. Oh, he is on the phone. Tell him he should give me a call if he, because I feel bad that I missed him. You can tell him, you can tell him. There?
Okay.
No? Yep. You want to wait again for another minute? Or try again during...
You can start. I'll try again in 5 minutes.
Okay. Very good. Okay, so we were discussing the question should from, again, very briefly, I didn't want to finish with that because I don't want to take time away from the other aspect of it. You know what, maybe I'll just actually hold off. If we have time in the end, I'll speak more about that. But basically, just, you know, before, you know, till we get back to it, I guess the idea of what we have left was, excuse me, we were talking about the two halves of the Yerushalmi, is the end of our Shua Sabikah, our, you know, kind of last minute yesterday, Shua Sabikah, don't cheer, seems to be weighing the status of Shutfus in two different directions. One is the Shutfim who are Tovim and who therefore have the right to make a claim, that they have the right to collect. And the question is, if there are two Shutfim who are the Tovim, right, to what extent do we need them as a unit? Do we need both of them, right, to be able to move forward in the Din Torah? And that seems to be a major debate between the Rishonim, how to interpret that particular Yerushalmi, whether, as the Ramban understands it, both Shutfim are necessary, are prerequisite in order to trigger a proper Tviya or proper Chiyuv. And that implies that Shutfis isn't just, you know, palgo-palgo or some sort of an efficient structure, but that it's okay that it's like that. We assume, yeah, right. I mean, you can see the Joey, are you there? I know something is. Except I see. Okay. No, didn't see that. You just okay. Got it. I should actually know that. All right. So basically, according to the Ramban, it seems that there is that the need for the collective is ma'akev each person's right in the. You know, in his particular portion, whereas other Rishonim think that it really is primarily half and half, and the Rabbi Abad and the Rajba and others think it's exactly the opposite. Each person has rights to the whole. So those are pretty much the three models that we would expect from Shutfus on the Toveya side of it, and the parallel is on the Nitva side of it. And where, again, the question is, each person is obligated in half. Each person, or bein shnehem, they're obligated in the whole, but no person is obligated, you know, any discrete part. Or each person is really obligated the whole, just that obviously in the, there are two things going on there. There's the din Torah between the you know, collective, let's say, nitva, and the toveya, and as far as that is concerned, we have one perspective. There's also a certain dynamic between the you know, the shutfim themselves, and that might, you know, that might be a different that might, you know, have a different result. So this is what we were encountering, and again, that part of it is since the Rishami says that, you know, shtaim shalavo are achrayin varvayin, so really that, you know, presents really itself in two ways. You know, one is that you can take from the whole from each one. The other is that that's betoras arbus, but there's an upfront loveh, each one on chetzi, and then you have you know, the backup orei. That's how it sounds in the Rambam in Parakafe, nafichas malva beloveh, according to the girsa that we have certainly, and sounds like, you know, there's the halva aspect and the arbus factor, and the bigger point that I was trying to make yesterday was that while this debate about how you look at Shutfus, whether you look at it, you know, as a collective unit, you know, but call it lakula, or in the opposite, lachomra, meaning lakula, that only the, you know, mibein shneim is there a chiyuv, only together Are they obligated? Or lechumra, you know, that being a partner means that every individual on a certain level has total liability, or the idea that, you know, shutfim have a natural, part, a discrete, you know, obligation. This is an objective question that applies to many dinim. And as we said yesterday, the default should be that, you know, that it's a din in shutfus, how shutfus is set up. And therefore, at least initially, you know, in analyzing these questions, we would expect that there would be a certain kind of consistency across the question of Toveya and Nitva, as well as across the different types of Tovim and Nitvaim. This is really, I'm just repeating what I said at the end of yesterday, because I think this is the question. And the more subtle, I guess, question when it comes to consistency of the sources themselves and of the particular poskim or authorities, whether Rishonim or poskim and Shulchan Aruch, is whether or not that is really true. So we do find that, you know, Rishonim, by linking certain topics, you know, together, you know, seem to be assuming that, you know, the Shutfus side of it is more universal. And then again, default, that should be Koveya. So the question of, you know, Shnei Lubin, Shnei Arevs, you know, Shnei Shomrim, you know, would be all, you know, one kind of halacha. And, you know, even other applications, like, again, I'd say across Toveya and Nitva, you know, that would be, you know, it's the same kind of question. Maybe it's solved in the same way. That already is a bigger leap. If we're talking about, you know, the tour of Balavimo, which is a sugya in Bamitzia and Sadivav Amar Aleph, or we're talking about the Schuyos, you know, to Kefel, which is the Gemara on Lamedalid Amid Beis and Amafkid, you know, it's all the same thing. It's basically a question whether or not you have these people as a unit, as a collective, you know, either Lakula or Lakumra, or you really break them down in half. And again, you know, the Rush and the Ramban and the Ran and the Nimukei Yosef and countless others that are, you know, applying the Yerushalmi here in Shavuos HaPikadon, right, to these other Rabban Metzia type questions and more, are part of the story. You also have a similar discussion, by the way, regarding Prizbal. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position is that, again, if you have two lovin, let's say, and the question is, can you write a Prizbal, you know, for purposes of Shemitah's Ksafim, Sugya in Hashaleach and in Gittin. So there's a machlokas, you know, Tanoim on that question. And I think it's the view of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel who says that, you know, the question is this: in order to write a Prizbal, you have to have karka. The lov has to have karka. Why the lov has to have a karka is a debate, you know, whether that's a din in regilus, or because the karka, even if it's a teeny, you know, little karka, you know, at least formally signifies some sort of nechasim mishubadim, which therefore makes the chov, let's say, omed legbiya, you know, that becomes part of the story of, you know, loyigos or not being loyigos. You know, it's like, you know, gavu yvi omed, etc. And again, that's a debate among the Rishonim. It might be relevant to this as well. But either way, on the books, the Mishnah in Shviyas, and the Gemara records it in Gittin, requires that a lova, you know, own some karka. So the question is, if you have shutfim and they were lovu, does each shutaf require bailus on karka? Or does the fact that one of the shutfim, you know, have bailus on karka, you know, is that sufficient? That seems to be the view of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So again, the Hagos Maimonios in Hagos Mavavalova, you know, links that question to our Yerushalmi and to these other cases. Because again, it sounds like it's all one question, whether or not, you know, every shutaf is a half mechuyav, right? In which case, for example, here you would think that against Rav Shimon Gamliel, it would be strange to think that just because one shittif has karka, you know, that helps for Prisbol, you know, for the other shutfim as well. Again, unless you start saying that it's not a din in shibudim, it's more of a din in regilus, and that can go either way. You know, for shchiach, davar sheino shchiach, etc. That's Rashi's view of Gittin. But that goes from Munios links the discussion, as just as the other Rishonim, you know, linked up Balavivo and Kefa. But at the end of the day, what I was trying to suggest, in order to square some of the what otherwise would be, I think, apparent stiros, even in the Gemaras themselves, right? Again, even just looking at a Shoel and a Mafkid, it sounds like in a Shoel that, you know, we're considering more the possibility of you know, Shutav having, you know, a Ptur and half of Balavimo. You know, not really, sounds like, again, depends on the Rishonim, that when it comes to Haredi B'Shalim and Kefel, that you know, it's either all, you know, or nothing that's going to work, or it's not going to work. But in general, however you make the distinction, again, let's take the, you know, the debate among the Rishonim about Inu Nachroyin, you know, in the case of Shnei Lovin, as we discussed. So that's a statement, you know, of, you know, Gviya, you know, after the fact, or is that a L'chatchila statement about Chiyuv, you know, and Gviya? In other words, you have two Lovin, so the Balva can really come to anyone that he wants and demand the whole thing, or, you know, he can only demand half from each, and of course if he doesn't get satisfaction, then on the secondary level there is Arbus, which is still a Kiddush, actually. So that again is a major debate among the Rishonim. If you look at the Rambam, as I say, here's that we have Perek Chafei, Balva Vlova, it sounds like on that issue, Gufa, the Rambam's Mechalek, between two Lovin and two Arevs. Right, let's say you have two Arevs. Can you, to the Chatchila, do you have to ask, you know, half from each, and then only after the fact as a secondary, you know, you go to each one, you know, for the boat, that's a backup. It sounds, according to, again, depends on how you, what the Nusach is, it sounds like the Rambam might be Mechalek between two Lovin and two Arevs. So, again, certainly the possibility of being Mechalek between the Toveya and the Nitva, when you have two Tovim or two Nitzvaim, makes a lot of sense. And particularly when there's something to, like, differentiate or individuate the Shutfas itself. In other words, if the Shutfin themselves were on the Toveya side or the Nitva side, and that might be one of the distinctions, in addition to being just a distinction in its own right, you know, the Mechayev and the Mischayev, if the nature of the transaction is such that each of the Shutfin, you know, himself, you know, benefits in a discrete way, then, like, each one gets 50% of something, whether it's a Matan Mos, etc., that might be different than, you know, if the two of them as a unit are really receiving, you know, and that also dictates the disbursement, let's say, of 100% of the received funds.
Right.
In other words, in addition to everything else, there might be a difference between those elements, or somebody's receiving anything as opposed to somebody being the Skayev Atzmo. For example, again, the distinction between Lava, Elova, and Arev makes a lot of sense, that, you know, if you have two Lovin and each one is considered a 50% recipient, that's still quite different, possibly, than two Arevs, who are just Miskayevus Atzmo, depending on what that Miskayevus is. Again, if it's the status of a Lova, you know, Ki'ilu Kibel, but then it might be different. But certainly if it's a Skayevus, you might say, you know, it's just different. Maybe two Arevs, you know, are just, each one is an Arev Bakal, and you have two of them. And again, that still doesn't mean that the Din Torah between the two of them isn't going to take place. But to Lovin, really, you know, Shutfim, you know, maybe there's more reason to be thinking of it as Kol Echad B'Chetzi. So it becomes like a very interesting, or again, Shemitas Ksafim, you know, might be different, and Balavimo might be different, and, you know, Shomrim in general, Kefel, for the reasons that we discussed the other day, you know, might be in our Shuas HaDayanim Shir, which we're going to go back to in a minute, might be very different, depending on, you know, whether this is something out of whole cloth and it's just, you know, something that he acquires, or it's really b'toras, you know, the rights of being a shomer, and then if you have two shomerim, you know. So both on the Tovea, the distinction between Tovea and Nitvan, even different Tovim and different Nitvayim, different institutions of Halacha, you know, there might be some that, you know, are just more naturally inclined to break down into discrete units, at least on the L'chatchil level, and others which really are just more of a collective, L'kula or L'chomer. So that would help a lot in, let's say, navigating some of the differences. And then, of course, there's somebody mentioned to me, Bechor, of course, where there's no din of where Shutfin is a p'tur, and you know, what about Chala and all sorts of dinim, you know, to mention, I think Esrog. What is the status of Shutfas, right, in all sorts of areas of Halacha? So in the beginning of what is it, the fifth parak of Nedarim. You know, the Breira Sugya there, where a person is Mudra Hana, you know, and there are two Shutfim, so is he Nichnas, you know, Matoch, the Chelik of the person that he was Mudra Hana, or both, or one or the other. I mean, the discussions there in the Ramban and the Ran. And, I mean, this is a massive, as you can imagine, Shas topic, Sugya Sota, all sorts, all over the place, where we have this question whether Shutfis is a collective unit, indivisible collective unit, Lakula, Lakumra, or 50-50. And I say these are approaches to that question, and it's really, if you break it down, you know, it's a very it's a very eye-opening topic. So I hope another time to go, you know, into the problem, what is really the Rambam Shita, what is really the Ramban Shita, to really try to pin that down, but it would take too much time to do it right now. But the Yerushalmi here is really one of the main makoros, depending on how you read both the Tovea part and the Nitva part. This is one of the oft-quoted makoros, you know, for this question. Okay, so that is in terms of the Shavuos HaPikadon side. Getting back to Shavuos HaDayanim now. So we were discussing, and again, kind of doing this a very similar thing. The four sugyas that Bali Tosas link together in terms of the question of Hiskaivus and whether or not Hiskaivus requires a kinyan and is binding, under what conditions it's binding, etc. So again, the tendency of Bali Tosas was to put it all, and again, understandably, together to look for a kind of a unified perspective. What happens, you know, when you have certain rights, again, default rights, or it is a default, script, you know, halakhic script, protocol, and you want to be in the sky of yourself, right, to change the trajectory of that. So, at what point is your commitment, you know, binding, or not? So again, the Bali Tosas view was that the four sugyas, the sugya in Zamborer about Kibbola, the sugya in Yesh Nochlin about, you know, Hashbeah B'tol for a Nidon, for a Nitva, who could be, you know, just Niftar, doesn't even require Shua, presumably. Hashbeah B'tol. But he responds by saying Hashbeah B'tol. The sugya in a Mafkid, where the person commits Harini Mishalim, Legabe, the question of Skus Kefel, and the sugya here, where you know, he says, you know, Pocha no Samiyad, where he says, Harini Mishalim, when he could be Nishba, the Niftar Ben HaTorah, in this case, presumably, we'll say one of the Mikzas. So the Bali Tosas link them all together, at least initially. And with that, there emerges an interesting Machlokas Rishonim, you know, how all the evidence really goes, whether or not, basically, his Chaibus is effective or not. And then there is a question about, you know, some different details. And what we were trying to show was that, you know, against the backdrop of the Rambam, the Rif on the one hand, and other Rishonim about whether you can just generate your own Hiskaibus without a kinyan, and whether it's binding. So it seems like, you know, this is a parallel question to that, because again, you have the right to follow the traditional, you know, normative protocol here, and you're being mischayev yourself. So from that point of view, is there really any difference between, you know, saying, mischayev myself to give you a matana, or to give you $100, and being mischayev yourself, you know, to accept the different methodology of debt, of, of dispute, rather, resolution, you know, so instead of being taking a shvuah and being a niftar, or instead of, you know, using your status as motzi mechaver olav araya, you know, that you change the rules. So one way to look at all this, certainly, is to say, you know, whatever differences there are minor, and what they all share in common, like in a unified way, is that, you know, you have default rights, and you've made a hischaivus, you know, to change that. It doesn't really matter, from that point of view, so much whether the hischaivus is about dollars and cents, or the hischaivus is about to a certain process, or the details of that process. And that certainly, again, is the way that the Rishonim are looking at these four topics. I think, thanks to the contribution of the Bali Tosis who brought them together, once they did that, it became, you know, they became one unit, essentially. And then, you know, that's interesting to connect that also to the bigger question that other people do. I'm certainly doing that. Meaning the question of, in general, does this chayvus need a king? And, you know, in light of that, we discussed some of these aspects. However, what we tried to show was that there's also good reason, maybe, to take alternative approaches. One is, in terms of the factor of Gemar Din, which needs to be defined here and also assessed, like what role will it play? What is a Gemar Din, you know, between the formal ones, Ish Poniyat HaChayev, Poniyat, you know, Ish Poniyat HaZaka, Ish Poniyat HaChayev, Chayev HaTalitein, Tzei Teinlo, and even earlier things where I say, you know what, I rest my fate on Hashbei Avital, or on, you know, on Kiblu Alai, you know, etc. What is a Gemar Din? And that is, it's very possible that, you know, when you know, when something is over, it's over. So even if it's chaybos per se, you know, doesn't have that binding capacity, you know, once the Din Torah is done, it's done. Possibly. And then the question is, what constitutes that? And then we have a range of views, what constitutes that? The Ramban, again, in Bal Basra, Kuf Habkes, quoting the Rimigash there, basically says that even after Hashbei Avital V'Nishba, there's no Gemar Din. Right? And as we discussed, the Rambam, of all people, in Kiblu Alai, says that you know, you could be chozer, you know, until the actual Bitsua Hadin takes place. So, and then others will say that just saying Hashbei Avital, you know, is already, you know, you take away, you've given it over to the kumbase, it's now you kick the ball, let's say, into the other guy's court, you know, now it's his call, so that constitutes a Gemar Din. So that's one factor. And the I guess the second factor is whether to be mechalek between a hischaivus, you know, that is generated, you know, without any kind of framework at all, like the Rambam Rif other Rishonim question. I just say I'm going to give you matana. Again, there might be a framework in terms of our, you know, friendly relationships or other things, but I mean legally, no framework, right? So I'm mischayev to you, you know, out of the air, basically, as opposed to a Din Torah situation where, you know, the rights and the, you know, balance of interests are already part of the story. So that is something that maybe you could be machalik in either direction. Right? You might say that a hischaivus, you know, out of whole cloth, you know, is more difficult to sustain and to justify. But if you're already in a Din Torah and it's a question of, you know, he has you know, prerogatives and I have, you know, certain, you know, strengths, there are pros and there are cons. So the ischaivus in that context, you know, both in terms of asmachta, like how serious you are about it, and even more, you know, to the point for me, it's not that kind of ischaivus anymore. It's like, you know, the Torah has barely, I guess the approach would be, the Torah has barely divided, you know, between these two people's rights and prerogatives. You know, the more you think that, you know, whatever the Torah, you know, has decided in terms of the protocol is like very, very decisive, let's say a nitva with motzi mechaver olav araya is poter legamli, you know, and he just has to go through the motions. If you think that, then it's much more comparable to a hischaivus, you know, which is generated from Yesh Me'ayim. But if you think that every Tobeya Nitva, right, even if you say Motzim Rechevar Lavaraya, and Kol Shekein, if you need a Shvua Daraisa, or a Nishba Benotel, to win, which implies that the proximity, in terms of the balance of claims, is even greater, right, that the gap between them is bridged somewhat. So then, basically, you know, you're not talking about a Yiskaibus from Yesh Me'ayin. You're talking about, you know, it could go this way, it could go that way. The Torah has a system, and the Torah allows the Bali Dinim to tweak, you know, and to acknowledge, you know, the other person's strengths as part of the process as well. So then it's different. Now it's different, and therefore it's easier to apply such a Yiskaibus. Maybe that would be the idea. You know, Rashi and those who think that the Yiskaibus in these cases is pretty expansive don't necessarily have to sign on, you know, to the Rambam and the Rif in Yesh Me'ayim. But it also could go in the other direction. Namely, maybe the Rambam is more reticent, you know, about the Yiskaibus of, you know, within the Din Torah, where there's an established protocol and there are, like, principles of justice, you know, being applied. And, you know, you're not saying I'm the Mischayev, you know, to give you $100. You're really saying, you know, I'm the Mischayev to oppose. I'm just saying it in a more belligerent way because I'm trying to make the point. You know, I want to oppose, you know, the Dine Torah and create, you know, ones of my own. Instead of saying, like I said it before, just I want to tweak, you know, and reflect, you know, the other side's, you know, strong, you know, credentials as well. So if you look at it that way, you know, tampering with the system, you know, can be something which we're more, you know, reticent, you know, about. So if you want to be Mischayev, be Mischayev, and if not, then, you know, the Torah's not going to sign Davar Shebemamon, but, you know, we're not, you know, maybe it takes much more to accomplish that. So that, I think, may be actually the view of the Rambam in some of these cases. And then, you know, in between, you know, to be Mechalek, you know, between the situations themselves. In other words, once we think that not every Yiskaibus is just a Yiskaibus, but that the you know, the dynamic, let's say, between the sides dictates how much of a, you know, Yiskaibus it really is, in one way or another. Again, I'm not sure whether Lakula or Lakumra, how it goes. So then you don't even necessarily, you know, it's not just the question whether, you know, Hiskaibus, Miesh Miayin is the same as Hiskaibus in these four cases, but the four cases themselves. And that's what I was talking about in terms of Motiv Miktas, Shvuas HaShomrim, a case where there's Motiv Mechaber Lev Arayin, you don't have any Chiyuv Shvua Doraisa, a case where you switch the other guy, you know, you change the trajectory and you say that he can be Nishba Vanotel. In all these cases, you just might, and I think the way the evidence stacks up, you know, it actually kind of supports that or reinforces that. Now, of course, Kibbalah is just a great, great example because of the work that we did earlier in the year. Namely, there are, you know, two radically different perspectives on Kibbalah. One is that, you know, anybody who doesn't have the status of an Ein and a Dayan, you know, Midin Torah, or in terms of the numbers, you know, how many Einim, how many Dayanim, etc. So we're not dealing with Din at all. So we're dealing with, you know, pure Hiskaibus. And that, you know, again, that'll stand on its own. On the other hand, if we think that there's something called personal din, and that Kiblu Alai is part of that story, and that it's Masa Mashkosu B'Torah B'Tai Dovr Shema Mamon, in the sense of, you know, again, there are low plugs that define, you know, the system which operates across the board and which is obligatory, and then the two Bali Dinim have a right to tweak and say, you know, we're gonna, you know, gonna refine, you know, some of the rules. You know, there's an agreement, Meirosh, to refine some of the rules, but it's still, you know, a method or a din. And, you know, that's where we saw a lot of evidence, you know, in both directions. That it's just a very different kind of Hiskaibus. And Moshe Ma'an Dover Doma to the Sanhedrin people of a couple of years ago, you know, to the, although it isn't the same, but again, it's parallel to the question of pshara, right? If pshara tzricha kinyan, pshara ain't tzricha kinyan, you know, agreeing to a pshara instead of a din or a bitzua, or maybe that's the difference between pshara and bitzua according to some rishonim, right, is an adjustment on the system, or it is an abdication of the system. So what are the dinim of hischaibus in Pshara? What are the dinim of hischaibus in Kibbul Alai? What are the dinim of hischaibus, you know, in these three other cases? What are the dinim of hischaibus in a yesh me'ayin hischaibus? So these are all positions which can be, which some of which we have documented, which can be documented further if we have the time, in terms of this big question. So there's a question of hischaibus, there's a question of how you define gemar din, and then there's a third question of what the relationship is between types of hischaibus and the assessment of different dynamics, where the frameworks certainly exist already, you know, to resolve dinim, and like assessing, you know, how much the, call it the hischaibus, or the tweaking in question, really constitutes a radical change or shift. So having said that, it's just interesting to note that the Ravon, did anybody have a chance to look at the Ravons or not? Don't you look at the Ravon? Yeah? Nobody? Seems like everybody's really busy lately. Which could be. Could be true. No one? No? The Ravon, I think what I'd say was, Simeon Yudches and Simeon Tess, has two really interesting pieces in which, again, he seems to, you know, and I think he seems to convey very clearly that, you know, since I've just spent some time and against, in a way, the more conventional view, which is that this is a much more nuanced view, I think the Rabban points to the fact that the questions of Hischaibus in these cases are mostly the question of whether Hischaibus requires or doesn't require a kinyan. The Rabban has a line in which he says that, you know, Hischaibus is Hischaibus shelo bifnei edim. I'm sorry, kinyan shelo bifnei edim, and Hischaibus bebezdin are both equivalent in the area of kinyan. Hey Josh, you saw the Ravon?
I did.
Okay. Like you're my last, I guess, hope.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. So that's what the Ravon seems to say. It seems to draw an equation between kinyan, you know, the question, again, he seems to be treating the question of the hischaibus, that if it's serious enough, because it's bifnei adayanim, you know, and so on, then, you know, you don't need it. You can accomplish a kinyan, believe kinyan, essentially. Then, when he discusses the problem of kibbul alai, I think l'shitaso, that he basically says, don't think what's going on in kibbul alai is that the hischaibus is for the dayanim or the edim, you know, whether it's the number or the kashrus, in other words, you're being machshir, this person or number, you know, that's connected in Torah. They may look like that, but that's not really what's happening. What's really happening in kibbul alai is that you're being miskayiv lo lachzor. I mean, we found this again, and we talked about this Ravon back in Sanhedrin, for those who were here. It's basically hischaibus lo lachzor, right, you know, from the hischaibus, you know, of following the dayanim, what these, you know, simulated or maybe even, you know, you know, masquerading, you know, dayanim or edim are saying. In other words, even kibbul alai, or maybe especially kibbul alai, is a hischaibus, right, to you know, to live up to your commitment, rather than, as others would have it, right, a hischaibus to an alternative structure of or definition of din or dayanim. So that's very much l'shitaso. So again, this is a very big topic. He says if you were to try to make the kibbul alai really on the kashrus of the acceptance of the edim and the dayanim, right, and not on the you know, on the hischaibus lo lachzor me'a hischaibus, says the Rabban, this is very interesting, that would constitute kinyan dvarim bialma. Right, the Gemara in Bava Basra, the beginning of Bava Basra, says it's something called kinyan dvarim bialma. Like if you it should from agree that they're going to split up, and they, you know, they make a kinyan about the rukos, like, you know, which direction. That's not considered concrete enough. That's kinyan dvar mialma. There's a huge literature in Rishonim, and the Rabban is very active in this whole discussion in Baal Basra as well. Right? What is kinyan dvar mialma, and what is not kinyan dvar mialma? Right? Why is it that masna shomar chinam no lios kishoel? So again, the mission of Metzia on Tzadik Gimel, why isn't that Kinyan Dvarim B'Alma? And why isn't Kibbul Alai Kinyan Dvarim B'Alma? You know, and yet, you know, Beruchos is considered to be Kinyan Dvarim B'Alma. So this is the Rabban's idea. Rabban says, whenever your Kinyan is Lo Lachzor, you know, from your agreement, that's not Kinyan Dvarim B'Alma. But when you try to, you know, kind of to make a Kinyan, right, in an unconventional way, on, you know, kind of a process, my language, not his, that's called Kinyan Dvar Mialma. I would have thought, frankly, and I think for some Rishonim, the exact opposite may be true. Right, a Kinyan Dvar Mialma is, you know, when you don't really do anything, you know, except commit. You know, the result, you know, I'll go through with it. But if you do something immediately and you change, you know, the dynamic, say, oh, I'm a kabbal, this is a gemar din, or I'm makir, you know, your rights, or I'm machshir, you know, dayan echad, or dayan, you know, of a certain kind of soul, right? So that's not kinyan dvar mialma. That's, you know, that's like an option that you have, not spelled out in the Torah, but implicit. You know, instead of choosing din Torah dayanim, you can choose from an array of acceptable, you know, kiblo olai, you know, dayanim. Just like there's Zabla, you know, there's Kibbul Alai. Right? So, although, of course, again, you can be Mechalik, certainly. But part of this whole topic, then, is what is Kinyan Dvar Mialma? Like, the Rishonim would disagree with the Rambam and the Rif. A lot of them say, if you make a Kinyan, even if you made a Kinyan, in many cases, there's a category called Kinyan Dvar Mialma. So Kol Shekein, if you just mischayev yourself, belikin. Again, the Rambam, in his famous discussion in Perek Hay of Hilchos Mechira, which we've talked about numerous times, there the Rambam talks about, you know, two opposite phenomena, right? One is making kinyanim when they're superfluous, that's when they don't accomplish anything, because you don't need them. Like you appoint a shliach, right? So if you do a bikinyan, what is that? Does that do anything? Does it add anything? Right? That's one. And the other is the opposite, where, you know, you make a kinyan, thinking that that will put you over the top, that will, you know, be machshir, that will be mechayev, you know, that will validate, you know, whatever transaction you're dealing with. So the Rambam says, like, people make a huge mistake about kinyan sudar, about kinyan, you know, in two directions. They pile it on when it's unnecessary, you know, and they think it, you know, it's a panacea. Again, not his words, mine, but that's kind of what he's saying. They think it's a panacea that, you know, that works for things that it really doesn't work. What I was trying to explain with that at the time was that, you know, this is all connected to kinyan sudar in particular, because lishitaso, for the Rambam, that's, you know, as Reb Chaim understood it, but we just expanded on it a lot, is that kinyan sudar is a kinyan, not that focuses on the maisa kinyan, right, but on a kinyan das. It's a commitment-oriented kinyan. If there's going to be a kinyan that's going to work, you know, bordering on, so that's kind of what I'm, on kinyan dvar mialma, it's going to be, of all kinyanim, kinyan sudar. That's the one that's going to... So I think that what the Rambam is saying is not just telling you, by the way, it's, you know, sociologically and legally, you know, interesting to note, you know, that people make two common mistakes, right? They have superfluous kinyanim, and they have, you know, kinyanim, that they regard as effective, you know, when it's not going to help them. I think what I'm saying is something much more profound. He's saying it's in the nature of kinyan sudar, right, that people, you know, are going to mix up, you know, the exact line of its effectiveness. Because it works in a way through das hamischayev, to use from Chaim's terms, through hischayvus, but you know, therefore you have to really, really be careful that it's not kinyan dvarim bialma on the one hand, or just, you know, this part you don't have to be careful for, but you just, you know, you should know that sometimes, like, it's just unnecessary. Sometimes, you know, the yischai v'sala, or the, you know, without a kinyan, you can also be mischayim. If you appoint a shliach, you don't need a kinyan. And if there are certain things that are not transactable, you know, because the cheftz is not nitan to a transaction, so you should know that the kinyan is not going to help you either. Right. So those are the two common mistakes are just, you know, they happen to be, like, you know, once record people's errors in addition to telling, you know, prescriptively what the halacha is, it's, you know, a way of, I think, accentuating what is singular about this particular derech hakinyan, is that these are the two, you know, this is the fallout in either direction. Okay, but based on that, so again, the Rambam's view in Perakin Alam Fikus Mechir Allah Tesvav is that, you know, a hischaibus, you know, yesh me'ayin, but when there's no reason to suspect an asmachta, that doesn't require a kinyan. But there are some things where even with a kinyan, you know, it's kinyan dvar bialma. So it's just, it's part of this topic, part of exactly this topic, both the mode of kinyan suda, but especially what is kinyan dvar bialma. There are a few cases in the Gemara, and then, you know, very wide-ranging views on the Rishonim, you know, what it really means, you know, and what it excludes. So the Rabban is really part of that story, and the Rabban here, you know, is weighing in on that issue. So in light of our analysis, which is how to look at these four sugyas and how they stack up to each other, how they stack up, you know, to the general question of the role of Hizchaibus Bali Kinyan, the comments of the Rabban are very, very important as well. Okay. Okay. So that's on the previous topic. So now let's turn our attention to Lashon HaKodesh and Kolosha. Okay. That's real. You able to see it?
Not so much.
Not so much? Okay. Who has? Josh. Right? What?
I've been called in Jew more than my peers.
You have been called in 3 years?
Wow. More than I've been called in 3 years.
Oh my goodness. I've neglected you mean. First of all, it took me a long, long time, you know, to put the, you know, the face and the name together.
Right.
You know, because you're so quiet. You know, so now that I've got it, I'm like running with it. You know. So, yeah. What do you make of that?
It's very ambiguous. Not only is it ambiguous, it's hardly understandable what Bilshon Nemra would mean.
Right. I mean, it's a very, very ambiguous is a good word. Usage. Like bilashona nemra.
Right.
You would expect that the terminology, you know, would be either bilashna kodesh nemra or bikolasho nemra. Right? But bilashona nemra just doesn't come trippingly off your tongue, put it that way. It's a bit of a awkward read, and there is some ambiguity in it for sure, in that what does that mean? Bil Shona meaning Lashna Kodesh, like the original, or Bil Shona, you know, whatever, like, you know, it's hard to know what it means, basically. So, yeah. Okay, what's like Kinnitza, and then what does Rashi say, by the way? So Rashi says maybe that's a solution to the problem. Bil Shona, as opposed to Bikol Lashon, means Bil Lashon Shuhu Maven. Okay, right? Maybe. And what does Tosis think about it? Not here so much, but in general. Okay, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
Okay, but Tosa says, Rashi says what you said he said. Api b'lashona nemra means b'kolashon, but you have to be maven. Is that reasonable that you have to be maven?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're talking about a very pragmatic application. And what does the Rimagash say about it?
Huh? probably because of ambiguity, he says, partly. He says, it's Lashon HaKodesh
Dafka. Yeah, and that's very Mechudash, certainly, right? The Rimigash's view is that Shavuos HaDeyanim requires Lashon HaKodesh, which is quite remarkable, right? Once again, another maverick. We have to put together all the, you know, all the maverick Rimigashes, and I'm trying to explain all year that, you know, the Rambam's response to them is always, you know, complex. Sometimes he adopts, sometimes he tweaks and adapts. Even when he rejects, he usually tweaks and adapts, you know, or at least acknowledges. The Rambam was a huge fan. He never dismissed the Rimigash. He was also hugely independent, right? And again, you see this dynamic of how you could say halakha evolves if you want, but we mean it in a very specific way, meaning, you know, the discussion of the Doros and how that that influences, you know, each Dor and Tzchak Mevesora contributing to the other. A great example of that, I mean, you have it in Rishonim all the time, but a great example of that is just what the Rambam did with Rimigashes. And there's probably no better limud in the world. That sounds like a big statement. Than Shavuos, you know, to demonstrate that. Right? A little bit Baba Basra too. There are some very dramatic, like we talked about Nogeh B'Davar, there's, you know, Anovio Omdos Li Batzer, there is a few on there. Listen, Batzer actually is not Baba, that's in Shavuos here. But most of them, there are a few in Baba Basra, but especially the Rimigash and Shavuos, which is a running commentary, you know, which is not what it is in Baba Basra, really provides, and, you know, I'm just repeating what I've said, but it bears, it's important. It's a running commentary on the Masechta, and you just see how, you know, it was always in front of the Rambam, you know, or at least, I don't know if the pages were, but certainly the Masorah was. And, you know, it's he's accepting, he's rejecting, he's tweaking in all sorts of, you know, fascinating ways, but he's never ignoring the Rimigash. Here, too, he quotes, as we'll see, but it's interesting the way that he quotes it, right? He quotes Horu Rabosai, he quotes the day of the Rimigash. The Rimigash is very, very difficult to accept here. Very fascinating shita. I mean, you would have expected that Shavuos HaDeyanim would be Bekol Lashon. The language Afi B'Lashon HaNemra, as you correctly noted, is already, you know, pushing it. And the idea that means, you know, Lashon HaKodesh, that there means the substance that you require Lashon HaKodesh for Shavuos HaDeyanim, is fascinating. Kiditnan, let's get to it in a second. Yeah. What's Kiditnan? What are they quoting?
Oh,
Mishnah. Which, no, we're skipping. Why would we skip? You said,
I already started on Lam Chesed D. No, I know. I see what you're saying.
I'm sorry. Shavuos HaDeyanim Afi B'Lashon HaNemra. Good. We did a little bit of Hevi Odeh Shekol Olam Kulin this essay, yeah?
Right.
So we are skipping. I thought we already skipped.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Again,
it's because I never call on you, so we just don't. You know, we just don't understand each other that well. You know, we have to work on it.
So, what are we quoting the Mishnah in Sota?
Yeah, correct. So, we're quoting a Mishnah in Sota, which is the Mishnah about this question, right? B'lashon HaKodesh and Kol Lashon. Go ahead, Kedidnan.
Other than Marim, the Kol Lashon, which is in Lashon also, Arshon Sota, Yidin Maisa, Krishna, Tvila, Kurta Samazon, Shmos Edis, Rizadikano.
Yeah. Again, there's that ambiguity. Meaning what? That it's a contrast to Shavuos Edus and Shavuos HaBikadon? Right? Or it is again, it's according to the Rimigash, right? It means that it's not mentioned on the list of Kol Lashon, right? So the Kamanami Shavuos HaDeyanim Afi B'Lashon HaNemra. So appended to that Mishnah should be, you know, since the Mishnah didn't mention Shavuos HaDeyanim as opposed to Shavuos HaEdus and Shavuos Afi Kadon, right? So obviously, you know, it's intended to say that you need Kol Lashon. And Rashi and most Rishonim in the Rambam, and most Rishonim will say that, you know, the Mishnah, which says, Shvusapikadon is excluded, you know, from the requirement of Lashon HaKodesh, right? So Hu Adin, right? Shvus HaDeyanim. So once again, just nothing else. I mean, there are two questions, you know, to think about here, right? One is, why would Shvus HaDeyanim be a candidate for Lashon HaKodesh even, at all, never mind require it? That's one question. What's that question based on? What, Avi, what bothers me about it? So that's a second question, you know. Right. It doesn't really matter the order, right? I mean, one is just like, why would it be different than those two? Right. But let's say objective. Let's say you don't know anything about Shua Seidus and Shua Sepikada, and I just said to you, Avi, what do you think? Shua, there are some things that require Lashon HaKodesh, some things that don't. What do you think about Shua Sadiyana? Yeah, which is. Which is another way of saying what? To say it a little better or clearer. 100%, you're right. Just what's absent here that could be a reason for Lashon HaKodesh, typically? When do you think that Lashon HaKodesh is required, and when would it not be required? Let's say I just gave you that question. I told you certain dinim in the Torah require Lashon HaKodesh, other dinim don't. What do you think is the criterion for that? What would you say? You could say multiple things. You could say as many as you want, but what would come to mind? What kind of things would you say? Excellent. The first thing that you would think about would be the question whether there is a fixed text, whether there's a Torah Shebichtav that is important, or some other text that is important. Whenever there's a nusach or a text. Right. So, and it was, you know, our understanding is that, you know, that it originally was in Lashon HaKodesh, right? So, if you have a text which implies a certain fixed and precise, you know, group of words, so to convey that, you may require Lashon HaKodesh, right? Otherwise, maybe you lose, you know, the textual aspect of that. So anything that has a text is a candidate for Lashon HaKodesh, I would think. Moreover, what else might be, what other factors might play? That's the number one, 100%. So again, in that basis, Shvuah Sadayanim is a text? What? What do you think? No, I mean, basically, the Shvuah Sadayanim is that he's supposed to take a Shvuah on whatever. I mean, there's a parsha of the Torah that tells you how to be what to say, and fill in the blanks, like, you know, how much money. Not a text. It's a, you're conveying, right, information or an attitude, whatever you want to say. It's your side of the story, right? Why is that a text? If you talk about other things, the things that do, and maybe even some of the things that we're being told don't, which might be part of the answer here also, in terms of, you know, the omission of Shvuah Sadayanim. So, you know, anything with a text is a reasonable candidate for Lashon HaKodesh, and is therefore also a reasonable candidate for the miut, you know, being told that, by the way, you should know, it works, you know, there's a havamina of Lashon HaKodesh, right? And therefore, it's a reasonable, you know, it's reasonable that you might need a limud for that, or that, it, you know, it might have been otherwise. So, for example, you know, what how does the Mishnah go in Sota? Do we have the whole Mishnah there? Josh?
Yeah. Parsha Sota, we do a mindset, even the Rosh HaKodesh thing.
What's that? Eil Namor B'Chalosha, right? You have it? Lamed Beis Amid Aleph, beginning of the seventh parak? Okay. Okay. Then the Gemara of the Mishnah goes on to tell us, you know, what the makar of certain things are. Okay, so just looking at the list very quickly, I mean, we'll go through some of them specific. Again, we could spend a lot of time on this, but we can't, you know, because we just don't have it. But it's a fascinating issue, right? The broader question is fascinating. When should you require Lashon HaKodesh and when not? And then the individual, in light of that, the individual applications, you know, become very interesting, right? So, okay, what do you think about, these are Nemar and B'Kaloshon. Parsha Sota, what do you think? Obvious, or it could have been a Lashon HaKodesh? I mean, it is B'Kaloshon, that's right. The Mishnah needs to tell us? Sure, because it's a Parsha, right? It's a very specific text that is said as part of a tekes, as part of a protocol that is undertaken in a very, you know, very exotic and you know, unusual tekes, frankly, right? But the Parsha of Sota is a text that is used in that context. So the idea that the text itself, right, in its original or in its textual, that's a points maybe, form would be required is very, very reasonable. Is it difficult to explain, you know, that it's not? No. Right? It's probably never too, let me say it this way, it's never too difficult to explain, you know, B'Kaloshon in the end of the day. Although, when you say that something is B'Kaloshon, right, there are still probably two questions that you need to address. Yakir? It is Misvara.
Is it still a text, or are we saying it's not?
Excellent. Is it still a text, despite the fact that it worked? So it's a kind of targum of the text. You retain the text, it's just that there are texts. Some texts require the original, or they're not translatable, and other texts are translatable. And that relates to the second point, the overlapping point as well. Namely, how precise does the targum need to be, right? Is it enough to convey the general information, or do you have to really, like, you know, translate every single word? Now, there's the point that it's not B'Lashon HaKodesh because it looks like a protocol text, but in the end of the day, it's just the information that it conveys, in which case you can be looser about the translation, or this is a text in translation as well. Another closely related question is the question of what? Lashon Shatameh. Right? Is it a prerequisite to, when you use a text, when you translate a text, is it a prerequisite that you understand it? And that, I mean, in two different ways. Number one, there could be that you always need to understand it. But what I mean, in other words, there are certain, in halacha, processes, you know, and the citation, let's say, or invocation of texts that require understanding, per se. But what I mean is something a little bit more than that, and that is, let's say, you know, there's a trade-off. Like, if you, you know, quoted this in Lashon HaKodesh, maybe you wouldn't need to understand it, or you wouldn't need to understand it fully. Maybe it would be enough. Maybe you wouldn't need to understand it at all, or maybe you'd understand it. I need to understand it in very general terms, like what it is. But if you're going to translate already, then it better be B'Lashon Shatameh, as like a compensation. Which, in addition to, I think there are two compensations, let's say, you know, for, like, to retain the text idea, even in translation. Right? One is the diuk, and they're different, although you might require both. One is the precision of it, right? To what extent are you keeping the pristine? You know, there's always something that's lost in translation. Right? That's the nature of what a translation is. Because every translation, in the end of the day, as they say, and it's mostly true, I mean, it's exaggerated, what people say, but it is true to some extent that every translation is an interpretation, or loses something, you know, of the original, you know, a feeling, you know, a nuance, you know, in some case. Look at Unklus, right? Again, Unklus, it's not like, that's why I said it's a little bit exact. Unklus wasn't intended only to be a translation, right? Unklus had then Targum Yonah Sabin Ozeel and Targum Yerusha, all these things, they were intended with it, you know, to be translation / interpretations, and they had an agenda, you know, in terms of anti-anthropomorphism and Targum Yonah Sabin Ozeel in terms of Midrashim and Chazal and other things, you know, as well. So it's a little exaggerated when people say, you know, that every, like, I read a book about this guy, you know, who spent, you know, years you know, like he was, you know, like his passion was, you know, the Russian, you know, writers, you know, Dostoevsky and Tolstoy and, you know, and all these people. So he, like, you know, he and his wife, you know, spent years, you know, working on, you know, translations, you know, and, you know, trying to demonstrate, you know, that you can't translate without interpreting. So I don't know whether that was such a great use of time or not, but it's a great book, anyway. But that's what the book is mostly about. But it's, the point is that Targum, right, a translation, right, needs to be true to the intent and the meaning and also some of the nuances, if you want to retain the text idea. And in terms of overcompensation or compensation for not being beloved, you know, in its original and maybe in its most pristine, most accurate form, so maybe, you know, that is, you know, is compensated for by the fact that it's Lashon Shatameh, that you can, you know, understand it better. Right, so that's a question. Okay, so you have here Parsha Sota. Right, that's going to be a question, like, you know, how precisely do you need to translate it? It is, after all, a text. Or is the Mishnah saying, and you can be mechalik between these different cases, I'm just trying to point out what the issues are, right? Vidui Meiser, what do you think? Vidui Meiser, text?
Especially when Mikra Mikrum the other
list. Excellent, very good. No, I should have called on you years earlier.
I did all this time.
I know you did. The confidence and all that, especially. But, you know, you're getting there. Vidui Meiser, right, and the contrast to Mikra Bikurim is a very good point. They're back and back to each other, you know, in the Torah, right? And they seem like similar phenomena, right? There's an interesting question regarding Gerim as well, by the way, which we skipped actually a little bit, but we still should go back to that. You know, who was in Maimon Har Sinai, you know, and how do we understand Gerus? You know, can Gerim say Mikra Bikurim? Can they say Vidui Meisras? So it's a little bit part of the same topic. But the Vidui Meisras is a parsha and it's a protocol, right? And yet, unlike Mikra Bikurim, it can be translated. So once again, it's nitam l'tirgum, or it doesn't need tirgum, it just needs the general ideas, you know, to be conveyed. Okay, what about Kriya Shema? What do you think?
I'd say less so, but it's still...
I mean, it's still a very good candidate. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's an amazing... Right, we treat it as an amazing formulation. Right. I mean, Yichud Hashem, Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim, but in a very precise, I mean, look at the resonance of Kriya Shema, you know, in the history of Klal Yisrael, right? Very, you know, it could be just my personal bias, but like, you know, Hero Israel, you know, the Lord, you know, it doesn't quite, you know, do it, at least not for me. But again, that could be personal prejudice, but certainly Kriya Shema, because, and Eskin, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, there's so much parshanut, right, on, you know, the Yud Kei Vav Kei, Elokeinu, you know, the Echad, you know, the connection to, again, you know, Midas HaRachamim, Midas HaDin. I don't want to get, you know, into the whole business, but especially Yichud Hashem and the relationship between Yichud Hashem and Kabbal Samach HaShemayim, each one, and possibly, I believe in the Rambam, the overlap between the two, even though they are two different mitzvos. But I believe the way the Rambam formulates it, Nachas Kriya Shema, part of the story is these are two different mitzvahs and they're overlapping and not coincidentally integrated. So Kriya Shema, for sure, the principles, you know, you can definitely convey Yichud Hashem and Kabbalah Samach Shemayim and, you know, B'chol Levav, B'chol Nafsh, B'chol Me'odecha, you know, as well as, you know, V'ayu Advar Me'el Asher Nochi B'tzavcha Yom Alev Avecha and V'shinanta Levanecha and V'dibarta Bam, I'm just not going to get carried away. And the shift to Chavetzachav left to Chavaderech, you know, with the Osek B'mitzvah and the Pater B'mitzvah and all. Everything that goes along with it can be conveyed, for sure. And you wonder whether or not there isn't still an element of text. We'll see that is a debate between who and who. Anybody know? Well known? Moshe? The Rambam and the Raivid. Did you say the Rambam and the Raivid? What did you say?
I said,
what?
I said nothing.
You said nothing?
No.
Oh, you didn't say anything. Somebody said something.
Nothing.
You said something.
Nothing.
What did you say?
Right.
Yeah, the Rambam and the Raivid. The Rambam and the Raivid, because Kriya Shema discuss what?
What did you say?
Whether?
The idea of
Well, no, yeah, I understand, but the, no, I'm not talking about the to call it Torah Kulubut Kalasha, that Ravid, we'll talk about that too. But the Ram and Ravid debate whether or not, if you read Kriyas Rabbah Kalashon, you have to be Medayik, like exactly each word. And the Ravid says, what are you talking about? Anybody have a language? The Ravid in Hilchos Kriyas Shema? The Rambam? Where is it? Gimel. Perek Beis, Halacha Yud. Yeah, here you have it. Calling it up. Where's Nady when we need him? That's the Rambam.
Right. And the Rambam says, Abraham, ain't them a kubla das, if you should call Hashem as Peyrushain, or me adapting Acha Peyrusha.
Well, that's exactly the machlokes. That's an interesting argument. Right? The Rambam is saying it is true. I mean, you're not going to fight with the Mishnah. Right? But that doesn't mean that there's no din of either text or diuk. Right? It doesn't have to be text. Right? It could be diuk. Or that, you know, that could be... I think those could, in theory, they overlap a lot. I think that they're still two different things. I mean, are you quoting a text? Or like invoking a text? Or is it actually the content of the text? But, you know, the idea that some things are not targumable, you know, and therefore... You know, taking them out of their original requires, you know, either can't be done, or requires extra rigor, right? That's essentially the debate between the Rambam. I'm saying it's what he wants. It's a targum, right? And the Rambam will tell you, okay, they're targumim, they're targumim, right? Okay, let's continue for a minute. Tefillah. What about tefillah?
Also, I'd say less than
Kriyashma. Much less than Kriyashma. Is there nusach of tefillah?
There's no nusach of Kriyashma.
Exactly. There's no Nusach Doraisa, and we're talking about Doraisa.
Right.
So it's surprising a little bit that Tefillah is even on this list. Because what's the Havamina? Why would you think that Tefillah would require... On the other hand, can you think of any reason why Tefillah might require Lashon HaKodesh? What? The Malachim don't with Aramis. So that's more about the Kabbalah Tefillah than it is about the Maisa Tefillah. I thought about that too. Okay. What else? Yeah. What I mean, not as a text, Eitan?
Just one would think that the best way to express oneself to God would be a Lashon HaKodesh. It's a way of, either sanctifying and both making it more important to us.
Formalizing, and this, I think, touches on... Well, you know, to quote the Rav, we'll call the matir aspect of tefillah, which is that tefillah, that's from a textual point of view, and mostly to convey content. What's the havamina, basically? By the way, you know, this was a huge ruckus in the tshuvas of the Chasam Sofer. You know, and the Reform movement became a factor. So a lot of the poskim wrote how you can't really daven b'kol lashon, and then they, you know, were very pressured what to do with this whole mishnah and sugya in Sota. The Chasam Sofer has some very 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 famous tshuvas about it, because they saw, you know, the translation of tefillah as something which was, you know, undermining the sanctity of prayer and universalizing it and things of that sort. Certainly neutralizing. We'll call the Yira and the Matir component of Tefillah. Yeah?
Yeah, but textual level, don't you have a Matbea Bracha issue possibly?
Say again?
Don't you have a Shinai from the Matbea or the Bracha?
In Brachos. And that's a Dindra Banan. Right.
And
maybe.
I think that it's
Kolashim,
because when you translate it,
you're. Kolashim, Matbea, you know, it's Ma'akev.
Yeah.
But that is not typical. Okay. I mean, so what? But what would that signify to you? What that itself signify? Mostly, that's a din drabanan usually, because most brachos are drabanan.
Yeah, all right. Tefillah might be drabanan
anyway. Okay, right. So that there's a debate whether tefillah is darais or drabanan, right? And what we mean by that? I mean, the Ramban, as we know, is of the opinion that tefillah based Torah is daraisa. The Rambam's view is that tefillah is always daraisa. Let's assume, even according to the Ramban, we can be talking about tefillah beis tzara, presumably. According to the Rambam, you know, tefillah in general, you know, once a day certainly is d'oraisa. What I would say is as follows, and it goes back, I think what you're, the point that you're raising on a Rabbana level, you know, is very connected, you know, to what I was suggesting, maybe even on a d'oraisa level, in terms of Lashon HaKodesh, as opposed to a Nusach Meduyak. You're saying about a Nusach Meduyak. You're saying the phenomenon of there being a Nusach Meduyak, and that, you know, Ein Mishanim B'Mapeya Shetiv HaKamim, like, what's that about? Why is that true? Why did they insist on regularizing and objectifying, you know, the nusach of tefillah and of brachos? But I think that the answer, I mean, again, there could be a practical answer. There's, you know, you don't want ish kali yashavena yase. That's A. B, you know, not everybody really understands the nuances, you know, of what to be mibarech about, or what, you know, what that is. So just in terms of, you know, in terms of lo plug and making it something that belongs, you know, overlappingly, these are three ideas. In other words, number one, you don't want hefker. Number two, you want it to actually be a unifying element, which tefillah ended up being, you know, especially in the post-Mikdash era, but even otherwise. And number three, in terms of diuk, you know, lashono, or what, if you're going to leave it to people what they want, you know, people are people, you know. So they can come up with some very inappropriate or strange or just inadequate, you know, things. So there could be a whole three overlapping, we'll call it more like a sur meira aspect of why matbeah shetivu chachamim, you know, was something that would be insisted upon. But what I'm saying is something more than that. What I'm saying is there is no text, because there are themes. Now, according to the Rambam, like the based on his understanding of the Gemaras, right? There are like pivotal motifs that need to be in tefillah. Right, Shevach and Hoda and Bakasha, let's say. And the Rambam describes it in the beginning of Hilchos Tefillah, so fascinating. And you need those, and you need them in the right order, and probably in the right balance. But there's no text, you know, per se. D'oraisa, I'm talking about. The reason that we are so machmir about a text on a Rabbana level for Brachos and for Tefillah, in addition to the three that I just mentioned, is a reason maybe that reflects on the d'oraisa aspect as well. And that's what I was saying before. The matir idea. Meaning the idea that tefillah, you know, unlike other religions, by the way, you know, and especially today, popular religions, and where everybody's just, you know, you feel close to their bona sholem, you know, he's your best buddy, you can tell him anything, you can say it anyway, you know. We don't believe in that, you know. We do believe that a person should be close to their bona sholem. But we also believe that there's a, you know, that Abba and Yira, and, you know, are two sides of the same coin, and that there is a certain presumption, you know, or a person has to recognize the presumption of prayer, meaning how do you have the right, you know, to be mevakesh, or even to address, you know, the melech, malchei, amlachim, makadosh baruch hu. And again, this is a very, very big, I mean, it's so basic in halacha, but it's a theme that the Rav really developed, you know, in a very recurring way, again and again and again. And that is the idea of a matir. In other words, you need a matir to address the Rabbanu Shel Olam. It's so foreign to today's culture, even religious culture, but it's so critical to you know, to what's singular about halacha. So the tefillah is meant to be rachmininu, right, which is the language of the Gemara uses in Brachos and Abchafam and Aleph, you know, also to explain, you know, why Nashim are Chayavos B'Tvila, Tvila Rachmi, again, the question of the two Gersos there. But it's supposed to be an outpouring, you know, and there's room for Bakasha, and it's supposed to be a mechanism that brings you closer to Rabbanu Shalom, and then it accentuates a certain aspect of the relationship. But all that, you know, only if there's an acknowledgement that, you know, there's a tzivui Hashem that allows it, and that therefore it isn't presumptuous. That's what the Rav meant by the matir. And at various times he would say, oh, Pesukah Nezim is a matir, you know, the Shalosh Rishonos are a matir, in different ways. You know, Ashrei is a matir. These, in other words, you have to acknowledge that this isn't something to take for granted, that you have the ability to be omed lefnei Hashem, either to be mishabeach, like who are you to be mishabeach, the Rabbanus. That's kind of what the Gemara says in Megillah and in Brachos, where they talk about, you know, you can only use the Lishonos Shel Shevach, you know, that we find in Tanakh. Moshe Rabbeinu used the David HaMelech used, because otherwise it's kind of chutzpah. Why is it chutzpah? It's an overriding, you know, enthusiasm, you know, that you have for it. Well, what's so terrible about that? It's beautiful, right? So again, we don't want to, you know, pour cold water on the empathy and the relationship part. We totally believe in that. But we believe that what elevates that is when it's done according to proper protocol, if it's done with a matir, and according to the matbeah shetivu chachamim, and maybe the havam, you know, was, and it needs to be done in the formal language of Klal Yisrael, namely, that Lashon HaKodesh, the language of the Tzibor of Klal Yisrael, the language, you know, of Nesinas HaTorah, all of which is part of this, you know, the Ema part, call it, or, and, I think, overlapping, the Matir part of Tefillah. So Tefillah is Rachmi, but it's Rachmi, you know, if you go about it in a certain way. Add to that the famous comment, the beautiful comment of the of Rabbi Chaim Mivolozhin in Nefesh HaKayim. And he repeats it again in Ruach HaKayim, where he talks about the insight of Anshei Knesset HaGdola in formulating tefillah. So he says, you know, we just don't fully appreciate, you know, the tilim of machshavos and halachos, you know, that go into, you know, the nusach habrachos and the nusach, you know, hatefillah. Maybe I'll try to bring it in on Thursday when we continue with this. But if we did, you know, we would realize, like, the depth of, you know, Chazal's understanding, you know, of tefillah and what it means. So the point is that there isn't a text. There are motifs, right? You don't want it to be inaccurate, certainly, but the element of Ema, right, and, you know, and therefore, or Lashon HaTzibur of Klal Yisrael, the original Lashon of Klal Yisrael, and the Lashon of, you know, formalizing, you know, the text, and Lashon HaKodesh, you know, in that sense, may be part of the matir, but that's still quite different than Kriyashma or Sota or Bidui Maestros, you know, etc. So, for example, you would expect that in terms of, like, how much, say, according to the Rambam, how much diuk you need in the Targum, you know, or things of that sort. That, on the other hand, you'd expect for sure that there's a din of Lashon Shatamevin, right, mouthing prayers. It's an interesting question. What about Lashon Shatamevin and Lashon HaKodesh? That's a big question. You know, when is that the Avodah Megillah and Tefillah? Right? When is that work? And when is that equal to or better than, right, a Targum that you know? Right? Again, if you can have a text, the Targum, maybe even Shalom Mabin might be okay. So these are interesting questions. Let's continue. I'm going to stop because I know this Siyum is now. Let's just finish the first list at least. What about Birchas HaMazon? Again, there's no nusach, but there are motifs. And again, it's Shevach V'Hodah. There's definitely the Matir part. There's Torah, and there's Bris, and there's, you know, Nachlas Yisrael. Right? Again, it's not arbitrary. It's not just, you know, thank you, thank you, thank you. And, you know, it is the Chalt of Sabbat of Iraq. Like Tefillah, it might be Daraisa. Right? And Tefillah certainly might be a Kiyum Daraisa. You know, and the Keneged Karbanos and everything else. I mean, that, I think, figures into it. Birchas HaMazon is maybe the only bracha, or maybe Birchas HaTorah, according to the Ramban, right? That is Doraisa. That counts for something, too. It definitely highlights, thank you, the Chalta V'Savata V'Erachta, but again, the fact that it seems like Midoraisa, you have to accentuate particular themes, is part of the Matir and part of the accuracy of what you want to be invoking. And maybe Lashon HaKodesh might have, you know, been a part of that, both in its diuk and again in that tzibur / formal, you know, component of it. As for shvusa edus and shvusa bikadon, right, that round out the list, so that of course is a double challenge. Number one, what about shvusa dayanim and shvusa bitui? Shvusa dayanim fall out, we're dealing with right here, right? What about shvusa bitui? Like Mishnah talks about it, we'll talk about it when we finish this on Thursday. But of all the things in the Mishnah so far, the most mechudash, in terms of needing a miut, if you need one, are Shavuos HaPikadon and Shavuos HaEvus. It definitely, if anything, points to the bitui and hafla side more than the gezel and the hefset mamon side, right? Meaning that there's a nusach, that there's a hafla, you know, there's the right way to formulate this, and, you know, maybe the right way, even if it isn't a text, it's a kind of a text, not a biblical text, you know, but a nusach of bitui and hafla that, you know, gets elevated to the status of, you know, la yachel, or being, you know, a part of the mechayiv of these other things. But of all of them, certainly, and now, relative to that, what would you say about Shavuos HaDayanim? So here I think it's interesting. Number one, on the one hand, you would probably think that, you know, even less so, because it's less bitui oriented and more birur in terms of the Din Torah. So it's more about, you know, Dibur B'Yalma, and conveying, you know, there's less of a text and less of a focus on Nusach or Hafla. Right? So Shavuos HaDayanim is not an Hakos Shavuos of the Rambam. You know, at the end of the day, whatever we've said, you know, Shavuos Bitu, Shavuos Shav, Shavuos Eidos, and Shavuos HaPikadon are. Right? On the other hand, the other side of it is that at the end of the day, Shavuos Eidos and Shavuos HaPikadon, we need to do something to justify the Rimigash. Shavuos Eidos and Shavuos HaPikadon, like Bitui and Shav, are personal Shavuos. Right? And Shavuos HaDayanim, by definition, is a Shavua that is presided over by, that takes place in, right, the Bezdin. And therefore, maybe part of the formality of, you know, the Bezdin, is that it be in the, you know, the official language of the Jewish people. It's not text, and it's not a matir at all. But maybe it's the, you know, the Rishmi, you know, Lashon HaKodesh of the Tzibur, which needs to be used in a Bezdin, which is always more formal, you know, environment. Okay, let's just look at the list. I know I should stop. Oh, you know, I'm just going to stop. Okay, it's not fair. So I want to speak further about this. I want to talk about Bikur Mikurim Chalitza, Brachos HaKlalos, Birchas Kohanim, Birchas Kohen Gadol, Parshas, very quickly, Parshas Angla Rufa, Mashiach Muhammad, very quickly. You know, the Rashi and Tosis here in Sota, just very, very quickly, and a few other things. Again, a drive-by. And then we'll try to get to Rab and Shmuel, and then Mabinch for the Rise of the Rabban. I'll try to give you Mar Makomos in the next couple of days. And then Shtabed Lopartich, I think we said we wanted to get in as well. Okay, so Thursday is our next year, 10:30. Mazel tov to all the Mesaimim. Are there a lot of Mesaimim here? No Mesaimim?
Yeah.
Everybody. Just all Mazel.
What?
Yeah. Okay.
There's more reason to finish this.
You can even sign the, you know, the Shavuos, the Sukkah.
To finish, because it's all right for us to Yeshiva.
Right.
Yeah.
Joey's still here. Hey, Joey's still there.
Oh, that's my phone.
Hello?
He told me.